Acast recommends.
Hello, I'm Jordan North.
And I'm William Hanson.
And together we host Help I Sexted My Boss, a podcast that combines William's world of etiquette tips
with Jordan's special northern charm.
We help navigate the everyday challenges of modern life.
Like how to tell someone that their breath smells like death.
And of course, what should you do if you've accidentally sexted your boss?
Just search for Help I Sexted My Boss on your chosen podcast platform and let us help you change your life for the better.
Or potentially maybe make things worse.
It could go either way.
Acast is the home of comedy podcasts, including Richard Herring, Chris and Rosie Ramsey,
and the one you're listening to
right now.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who in a concert you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Unapologetically Black podcast.
You got it.
I feel so proud. This is the episode where we talk about different things. So join us. How are you?
Good. It's the end of the year. I'm really, really just looking forward to, you know, it's been a nice holiday break, but I'm really looking forward to the new year and starting fresh and feeling like I've gotten enough rest. So now I'm like motivated to start the year right. You know what I mean?
You mentioned before on the pod, yeah, that you was really excited to take in like your 3 weeks break. And we kind of spoke about the fact this is your first time actually taking a proper break because boundaries have been turned when it comes to your work isn't really quite there yet.
That's one of my New Year's resolutions.
Okay. I was going to say, do you think now you've taken this break, you'll be able to try and continue it a little bit?
I think so. I think part of the reason that I have boundaries saying or issues saying no or issues having boundaries is because I always feel like I'm playing catch up. Like this year has been so busy. And typically life is always so busy that I always feel like I'm trying to catch up and make sure that I'm on top of things. Whereas I feel like I've gotten enough rest this holiday for the first time.
Yeah.
Where I actually set my boundaries up front, you know, and work, make sure that I'm working consistently within those boundaries so that I'm not like catching up or feeling like I'm behind or, you know, putting too much on myself because part of it, I think, is that sometimes I say yes to everything and then I end up overwhelming myself. And sometimes I think part of it is being able to say no, knowing what I have in front of me and being like, can I take more on my plate? So.
And obviously the new year is coming very soon in 30 days in September, April, June, November, 29, 31, in 3 days' time. Clearly I'm losing track because it's the Christmas period. So what are you looking forward to for the new year? Anything in particular?
I'm looking to very much settling in to this new married life, you know, now that the wedding's over. Just settling into a bit of a routine with my husband. Incidentally, today I'm not wearing my ring. And really focusing on my fitness. I kickstarted that journey when I started kind of losing weight for the wedding. Now I feel like it's become part of my routine. I was just saying to you earlier today, like I put gym clothes on every day so that if I need to go to the gym, I can just dash out the door. So I've built it into my routine now and I'm not going 5 days a week anymore, but now I'll go like 3 days a week. Yeah. And keep it routine.
With the gym, do you actually notice your mental benefits to it?
100%. Whenever some days I'll be going, kind of like me coming on the podcast, like sometimes I'll go into the gym and I'll be like angry or on the verge of tears or upset about something. And then as soon as I go in, actually, those are the days that I have the best workouts.
Yeah.
It's like I zone in and I just forget about what's happening, whatever it is, and I just push through. My trainer's always amazed whenever I'm having one of those days. I don't think he's connected it to the fact that it's usually because I'm having a shitty personal day.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie yet. I definitely think that having a PT is the game changer for gym. And I was talking to my mum about this the other day and I was like, you know, in life, yeah, we will say we haven't got money for this, we haven't got money for that. But actually, we probably spend money on silly things elsewhere. So, like, before I might have done Uber Eats a few times a week. And I'm not saying Uber Eats a few times a week equate to... Okay, I've never ever done it a few times. That's a lie. A few times a month. And I'm not saying that ever equates to, like, how much it costs to have a PT. But the point is you can prioritise it to make it work for you if you need to, yeah? And I was saying to my mum, this week, I've obviously had a break because I've come back from Jamaica. So I've had a little break between like training and stuff. But if I had my PT sessions paid for, I would have had to have gone to the gym even if I was tired, even if I was this, because who's losing out on the big money you're spending per session? But then when you don't have one, it's easy to be like, bun the gym, it's cold, it's raining, yes. I'll have to go in the rain and the snow.
That's actually why I have the trainer. It's not even so much the spending of the money, but I hate disappointing people, which probably ties to my boundaries. So when I just made that connection, so when I don't go, I feel bad because I feel like I've wasted his time, you know? Mm-hmm. So I make it a point to go. Speaking of well-being, I have a fun fact for you today.
Okay, hit me. Well, don't, but hit me with it.
So, you know, in our work, we consistently prioritize well-being and wellness and talk about therapy all the time. And so I have a fun fact about Inez Beverly Prosso. She is the first female Black psychologist in the US. She was born into a family of 11 children in 1933. She got her PhD. And she taught for 18 years, specifically in schools for Black and minorities. So she was the first person to earn a psychology degree, first Black woman to earn a psychology degree in 1933.
Is she dead now?
That's a good question. She'd be old as fuck. Like, she'd be...
Actually, no, she must be... Not to push death on anyone. No. Uh-uh. But she would be, like, 19. So she's very old, if it was 30.
No, she's not alive anymore.
I was thinking that she just sounds like someone that would be so interesting to speak to, even from the perspective of like being from a family of 11. Do you know how much different personalities that is? Different experiences, different stories, and you're looking at it from a psychological lens. Like that must be so interesting.
100%. It says that she's passed. They have a memorial in her name. So I guess we can't speak to her, but it would be very interesting to hear how she what her journey was like, not just with the 11 kids, but being the first Black woman. I'm sure she was in a room full of white men at every turn in 1930s, because white women probably wouldn't have had that much access to tertiary education either at that time. Certainly less than white men would have. So yeah, it's probably the only woman and the only Black woman, or that only Black person.
That's so crazy though, especially when you look at like nearly 100 years on. And I do think it's getting better, but there's still a lot of challenges towards tackling the stigma when it comes to access and mental health, health, therapy, all of that sort of stuff. What it would have been like for her. You know, we had an episode before where it was like, who would you want to talk to at dinner or something dead or alive? If he was to do this now, I would add her onto that table, because I got questions, girl. I got questions.
It's interesting that you said that 100 years on, we're still facing some of these issues, because you're right. There's so much, there's so many barriers to mental health. I mean, it's still a taboo topic, I feel like, especially within our community. Although it's shifting, I will acknowledge the change. And I mean, we talk about this all the time, how difficult it is to access Black women therapists. And I think especially for us as a community, as Black women and Black people in general, it's really important. I mean, even this year alone, think about how many things happened as a community that led to some sort of trauma. I mean, we had the loss of Elian and in this year, you know, in Brixton. Was it Brixton or Croydon?
Croydon.
It was Croydon. There was a Black trans activist in the US called Anae Johnson. She died in October. She was killed in October. I mean, George Floyd happened a couple of years ago. Almost every year, I think about the fact that there's something that happens to us as a community that is causes us to have like sadness and anger, and you know, it's sad, you know, and I think we don't address that kind of community mental health, like that community mental health enough. Like we do it on a very individual basis, but how are we healing as a collective of Black people? But yeah, do you feel like as a community we do that kind of healing? And I feel like that's kind of what we try to do with our work.
Healing in terms of access and therapy?
No, like, so that individual therapy is one thing, but like, how are we healing as a community? Like, how are we healing collectively together as a community from all of these things that are happening to us as a collective, whether it's like institutional racism or workplace that happens to all of us, you know what I mean? I don't know if you've ever heard of Dr. Joy Leary. She wrote that book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome.
Oh, I've heard of that book. I haven't read it.
But so what she talks about is how we have passed down generationally that trauma in our DNA. Mm-hmm. And it shows up in different ways. So it shows up in self-esteem. Mm-hmm. You know, typically we have, you know, Black people are more prone to things like imposter syndrome. We know that they're subject to or susceptible to stereotype threat, where the stereotype threat is where you feel like people think you're going to underperform because of your race. And so as a consequence, you underperform. So it's like self-fulfilling prophecy.
Can I tell you a story about that quickly, yeah?
Yeah, tell me.
That's to do with me, but I didn't underperform in the end. That's the spoiler alert. But I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when I was at uni, and before we joined uni, Facebook was more relevant at the time. So you join like a Facebook group, so you would type in like Bournemouth Uni Freshers Week for 2017, which was what mine was, yeah. I joined it, started connecting with people that was on my course. It was all lovely, jubbly, lovely, jubbly. Then I basically applied for a scholarship at uni, which was like awarded to only one person within the whole year. So it doesn't matter what you're studying, only one person gets it. So when I got the scholarship, I was gassed, yeah, because it meant they would pay for like some of your tuition. So I posted it on Facebook, like feeling really proud. And you know, I'm a private person, so I don't even post things like this anyway. But on this occasion, I posted like, feeling really proud, got awarded a scholarship, was only given to one person, like, can't wait for university, da 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 da. Why did an abundance of white people who were going to be on my course DM me questioning my eligibility about it? Like, someone messaged me and was like, hey, hope you're well. I actually remember this word, like, verbatim. Hey, hope you're well. Glad to see you're going to be starting my course this year. I just wanted to check what grade you got at college because I'm confused how I was able to get the award. Another one, hey, hope you're well. No, it wasn't. This one wasn't hey, hope you're well, but it was like, hiya, saw that you posted about the award. Like, what did you do to deserve the acknowledgement?
Are you fucking serious?
No, for real. And I remember that's thinking, like, crazy. These people are going to be on my course. This isn't even like I've got a... I can get away from this. You're actually on my course. And I when I finished, that happened. I did 3 years of uni. And then when I left, because basically the scholarship was called the Most Promising Student Scholarship, yeah.
Okay.
And then when I left, and then also on my course, you had to do like a degree and you had to do a diploma along the same time. Mm-hmm. And you had to get like do shorthand and get a certain limit. And for all of these things, I got the top, yeah. So when I left, I then went back to that message. I wrote another post and was like, so glad to be leaving with a first class degree, a gold diploma, and 100 words per minute. Just as a like, and I think I said something like, so fuck you to all those people who didn't have faith in me. But I was talking about those people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, sorry. That's
crazy.
Because I'll never forget that.
Yo, sometimes white people are so bold and unbraze. Because what makes you think you can message a complete stranger and question how they got an award? Like, why is it any of your business?
It's crazy.
And that's the thing, is like, there's that need to celebrate those moments, right? And there's this whole concept of like us collectively celebrating and experiencing Black joy together that I think is so important, because we need those moments. And it's so nice. I remember today in our WhatsApp group, you posted like, does anybody want to share a win that they had today? And so many people came out and shared their wins that they were celebrating by themselves, but not necessarily celebrating that together. You know what I mean? And everybody was congratulating each other. And it was just such a nice moment. Like, I feel like we need more moments of collective Black joy to counter all of the things that we've experienced as a community that, yes, affect us as individuals, but it affects the way we interact with each other. It affects the way in which we move in the world.
No, I definitely agree. Because I think when the whole George Floyd stuff was going on, that was the first time I really understood what collective trauma was. And I felt like I was experiencing it myself. And I feel like when it comes to Black joy, I think we do better as a community of vocalizing it. So if Stormzy or Beyonce, for example, have a win, people will be like, look at this, this is great, this is great.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to like smaller wins, like, I kind of feel like they're a bit invalidated and we don't do it in the same way. And on a smaller level, so like when we're not looking at celebrities, I sometimes feel like when it comes to celebrating wins, there's more like internal competition, whether it's amongst friends or amongst family. So we don't see it as much. Which is why that prompted me to want to put it in the chat, because I was like, there's probably someone here who has acknowledged that they have a win and doesn't even have anyone to share it with, because they don't want someone to feel envious of them, or they don't want to feel like they're like overshadowing someone else's win. Do you get what I mean? But I think it's so important.
Yeah, and it was nice because everybody was sharing their own and congratulating the other. And I don't think, as you said, it didn't make anybody feel like they were overshadowing anybody else or undermining anybody else's wins. Everybody was just happy for each other, and it was just such a nice collective win to know that we're in a group of amazing, dope Black women who are just like succeeding at life and doing well and able to, you know, I feel like it counters that stereotype, right, of us being competitive with each other, not being able to celebrate each other and just like, you know, gassing each other up. It was really nice. So I think there's more of that's needed. And, you know, I was checking out the statistics earlier today, and it says that homicides have increased by 30%, but the rate for Black women and girls has risen by 33%. And in the US, every day, 5 Black women and girls are killed. And so there's clearly a lot of trauma that's still ongoing, going back to your point about that kind of like historical trauma that we're going through and actually still going through now. So it's important for us to think about when we think about our kids. And so what does Black joy look like for you? Like, I mean, we talked about the WhatsApp win and sharing each other's, but what's that collective joy? How do you celebrate Blackness? How do you celebrate your own joy with your community?
I'm not going to lie, I don't think it's anything I've ever thought about. I think I experienced Black joy definitely through others more than I think I find it easier to experience Black joy through others than myself. So like, if you have a win internally and externally, I feel more elated than when I have a win. Mm-hmm. I find it easier to like make a fuss out of your win than to like make a fuss of my own win.
You celebrate yourself, yeah.
So for example, I recently got a new job, which I told you about, yeah. And on the day that I found out, one of my close friends was having, because she works in PR, and she's basically having like an event for her PR event. So I didn't tell her about the job that I got it, because in my head, this is her day.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of the day like celebrating her and blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until we met up a few weeks later and she was like, oh, I heard like, you didn't tell me. And I'm like, oh. And I was thinking, are you sure? And she's like, yeah. And then I looked at the dates of when I got the job and I was like, it's because you had this on that event. You had this on that day. And she was like, but that doesn't mean there wasn't room for you to have told me that as well. But in my head, that would have been clouding her experience. I should let her have that day and just tell her the next day. And then I just didn't. Do you get what I mean?
Although some people are like that. I don't know. it's interesting. Somebody said to me, or I think we were talking about this as a collective, like, would you ever want your friend to propose or be proposed to
at your wedding?
And I was like, yeah, of course, the more the merrier. Like, it's just, I always envision, like, if I throw the bouquet or when I threw the bouquet, that somebody would get down on one knee and propose to the person who caught it. Like, I think those stories are quite cute. Like, I
if
don't
I saw that at your wedding, I would have kicked the bouquet out of the person's hand because there is no need. Yeah? It would have just flown back to somebody else.
I think it's romantic.
No. But maybe you, see, your experience of Black Joy is more, far more greater and generous than mine.
You know what I think about when I think about Black Joy? You know when you go to like, well, I've never been because I don't go to like festivals, but like massive festivals where there's loads of white people and they're all like, you know, inebriated and like, dancing all over the place and like, yeah, just having a great time together. I think, so maybe something like Afro Nation, just as an example.
Well, no, or like Carnival, being on the float.
Carnival is Black Joy.
On the float though, specifically on the float.
No. Everywhere in Carnival, as long as there's Black people, is Black Joy. Like, whether you're on the float, whether you're on the road, chipping it down the road, whether you're, like, the DJ, the Carnival parties, all the white people are still there, too. But, sorry.
How can Leanne say all of Carnival the Black people are? I'm like, there's white people, Chinese people, Hispanic people through and through.
Yeah, but that's just universal human joy. I'm talking about Black joy. And I think that's why these spaces are so important, where we can have, like, as important as I think it is to have all Black spaces to provide a space of healing, Black joy being a part of that healing can be experienced exclusively. Like, I think sometimes, I remember going to this play, Jeline, shout out to Jeline, and I went to this play, and it was a play put on by, I think it was a series of poems that were read, being read by Inoa Ellums, the guy who wrote Barbershop Chronicles. Anyway, so at one point in time, one of the poets came and said, I want all of the Black people to come to the front because this is really for you and I want you to experience this firsthand.
Sorry, was the room a full Black crowd? Or was it just...
No, it was mixed bag. It was a mixed bag. But the woman...
Was it asking people to all move their seats or just to stand at the front?
No, everybody was standing. We were already all standing.
Oh, so
they were
asking
to come to the forward. Yeah, it was one of those rooms where like there were like benches on the side, but the middle was empty. And so the poet was like, can you all just come forward? You know, Black people come forward, particularly Black women, I think. I think they said particularly Black woman. The way the white women them get vexed, dude. Like, I was appalled. These white women were fighting to push through to the front of the crowd. And I'm like, the man just said, or the woman just said, this poem specifically is for Black people. Can you make space for them? And not even white men, but white women were particularly annoyed and upset about it. And they felt like they, if they weren't going to be at the front, they were going to be right behind us. And it ruined the experience for us. And it wasn't, it felt like even within a moment that was being prepared for us, we still had to fight to get it. You know what I mean?
Because even, I imagine, I obviously wasn't there, but I would imagine if I was there and I noticed them doing that, I now can't even focus on the poem because now I'm thinking, what's going on behind me? Am I blocking someone's way?
No, my energy and my peace has already been disrupted by these people who don't want to, who feel like they have some sort of entitlement to a space that is not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that even though, again, we talk about like individual therapy, like the community that we've built, I think, I hope, is a space where people can celebrate joy, can celebrate happiness, can engage in some collective healing. Whether we're talking about breakups or we're talking about, you know, fertility and motherhood and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think we talk about everything under the sun. Like, I hope it does provide some space for people to heal and to celebrate joy. You know, I think you say this to me all the time, but a huge part of joy or a huge part of experiencing joy, even as an individual, is all about perspective. And you've always said, like, gratitude is such a game changer in terms of how you look on what your outlook is on life. So I feel like, what are some of the things that you do to change your perspective to feel grateful about stuff so that you're not like bogged down in the sadness completely? Or better yet, do you feel like expressing gratitude affects your mental health?
Yeah, I feel like it's more of a subconscious thing than a conscious thing. And I think it's because if I don't focus on it, then the only alternative for me personally is to focus on the negative. And because, as I've mentioned before on the pod, that I feel like God has made me his toughest soldier, I feel like I'm always going to be in a state or a perpetual cycle of always feeling down or always feeling depressed or always feeling this. So the only way I've managed to balance that is by focusing on all the things that I'm thankful for and all the things that I know are a blessing. And there's a thing that I've been saying on my Snapchat a lot for the past year, which is give God praise in all seasons. And I was saying it, I think, from last year. And I kept saying, I was saying it at a time where actually I didn't want to give God praise. So that's why I was saying in all seasons, because like I was almost trying to convince myself of this idea. But actually this year, it's kind of like that saying came to fruition, but it was like I was experiencing a mazzoline and being in the wilderness, but then also experiencing like really good news at the same time. And it was like playing out in real life, give God praise in all seasons. So I say that to say is that like through all the triumphs or challenges or battles that anyone may or may not be facing, I genuinely think there's always some sort of light, no matter how small, for you to find and focus on. And I guess it depends on, like, I guess for some people as well, everyone puts value in different things, isn't it? So, like, I seek a lot of value in a lot of different areas of my life. So, like, even if I was, like, down on the dumps, I had nothing, had no money, had this, I had that, I'd be like, well, at least I've got friends. Because some people don't have real friends. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not even just friends. It's like, at least I've got good friends. Some people have so many things. They have money, they have a big house, they have nice clothes. They ain't got friends. They're never going to experience that level of love and friendship and like intimacy that I've got. And I feel fulfilled and rich in that element. So I think when we make it a point to find like the beauty in all the little things and really like romanticize our lives for the most mundane things, it's then easier to find gratitude, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, we are at the end of the year. What do you feel like you're most grateful for this year? Like, looking back on this year, what are you most grateful for? let's get some Black joy in the podcast today, in the episode.
Okay. I'm grateful for my resilience.
Okay.
I'm grateful for my resilience. I'm grateful for...
Three things.
Okay. I'm grateful for my resilience. That's one. That's something I never thought I'd be grateful for, but I actually realise that it's a blessing, even though it's always spoken about in a negative way. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for new beginnings in terms of my job. I feel like on the surface level, it's like, oh, new job, it's great, like more money, this. But on a deeper level, it's actually like, it's actually more deep-rooted into me trusting myself and the ability to take risks. And that goes back into trauma and all of these things. So yeah, I would say that. And then the third thing I'd say I'm grateful for is meaningful relationships. Definitely focus on platonic because I'm definitely very single. but meaningful relationships, I think, yeah, going back to what I said a minute ago about like friendships and the fact that some people don't ever get to experience that, I feel like I've got a lot of like intimate, non-sexual intimate relationships. What would you call that? Like just platonic, I suppose.
But platonic,
Does platonic relationships include family? It doesn't, does it?
No, I think that's a familial relationship. I don't know actually if platonic only covers friends but or non-sexual. But I guess by saying non-sexual, you're also talking about your family. I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah. So I'll say it in a sentence rather than a word. But I definitely see the blessing in the level of intimacy I have with both my family members and my friends. I definitely have realised this year that's like a godsend, because lots of people generally don't have that. So I would say those are my three. A lot of people hate their family, but that's another podcast topic.
Oh my goodness, we should so do a podcast episode about people who hate their families or family members that you hate.
What would be your three?
Good question. I feel like I asked the question and didn't prepare myself to answer it. What am I most grateful for? I am grateful for family, for sure. And by family, I also include my girlfriends and my friends in general. I feel like over the past several years, I've built up my friends as my family. And it's been like life-saving the way they've always come through for me. You and others have come through for me in the past several years. And so I really do view, even though I have a very small family, I feel like I have a big family because I'm, you know, everybody's mom I'm close to, and or siblings, or just having the community of friends themselves. I think so. I'm grateful for that, as well as the new family that I've kind of walked into.
Mm-hmm.
I am grateful for a new start, similar to you. I know I'm saying all the same things, but it's true.
Not you being a copycat.
But it's true. Even though I'm not starting a new job, I am charting a new course for myself in my career, I think, between like having written my book.
I was actually going to say that. I was like, you can't miss that off the list.
Yeah. And then also, but the book is almost... yes, it's an achievement, and yes, I'm proud of it, but it's more so a stepping stone for me to start this new path for myself and chart out a new course, I think. So I think that's the second thing that I'm grateful for, is the new opportunities and just the capacity to like level up. You know what I mean? Every couple of years, you have to level up and like increase your skill set or do some personal growth. And so I'm excited to do that this year. I feel like this is another year to do that. And I am grateful for good food, man. Since I've been back home, like and I love eating out in London. You know this about me already. Like, I love trying new places and I love new food. And I miss the food in London for sure. Like, I miss the great restaurants and the atmosphere and, you know, going to my usual favorite spots, but actually eating good food at home every single day is an underestimated benefit. Like,
yeah,
yes, I like to go out and eat, you know, but also just like this morning I had like cooked on mackerel with potato and boiled banana and steamed veg. Like, if I was in England, I definitely would have been having yogurt and granola.
You'd have been having cornflakes. We'll be evicted if it's an exciting day.
So yeah, sometimes during the week I'll have ackee and saltfish, you know, and callaloo.
You know what? I love ackee and saltfish. I called my dad the other day and he was like, oh, I got some leftover ackee and saltfish, you know, from yesterday. I said, okay. I got on the first train to his house. The first train to his house. I don't think I even showered. I literally just put on my clothes and went there. Craven gyal.
No, it's very necessary. And what's nice actually is that Barry grows a lot of stuff. So Barry grows callaloo, we have pumpkin, we have bananas, we have all of our herbs. Like, I can go out into the garden and cut rosemary and make dinner. So it's also cost effective, which is great.
Yeah, that is actually really good. I feel like as well, yeah, I know this is a separate topic again, but I feel like a lot of people are starting to get really into like farming and growing their own produce in the UK.
100%. And actually, it's interesting because I feel like it's not such a far-fetched or a tangent, because some of those things are things that when we do them, we're actually nourishing our bodies without the GMO, the genetically modified food. And Barry, I know, spends a lot of time in the garden because he finds it to be relaxing. And
yeah, like, I was going to say that. That's why I feel about that. Like, I know this sounds personally, yeah. But when I water the plants in my house, I feel like I'm amazing. I'm like, wow, I watered the plants. They're still alive. Because I've got a plant that when I first got it, it lasted a week and died. Because I didn't realise it couldn't go outside. So I've still got it now and I'm like watering it. And I'm like, wow, like, I have got this plant still alive. Like, I just feel that I can do anything.
I kill everything that touches my hands.
No. You mean plants?
Yes, I mean plants.
Please, before someone calls the police to your house.
I mean plants, yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the case. I don't have a green thumb at all. It's really sad and miserable.
Like, I'm trying to force it. I'm really, really trying to force it.
But you were saying you think more and more people are, more and more black people, or just more and more people in general?
Oh, no, no, like black people. I've got a friend. I met her ages ago, actually, like 5 years ago. And I remember she said she had an allotment, and I just laughed. And I was like, you mean the things for old people? Why have you got one? And she was like, no, like I go there, I grow my stuff. And then like I met a guy, really handsome guy, but he's more invested, he more cared about his plants than he did woman. That's fine. You have that hobby. You'll grow old with your plants. I'll grow old with my cats. And then one of my friends, she's also got into it as well. And she's blogging. And then through like seeing who's following those accounts, I've realized there's a massive community of like young people doing it, which I think is cool. Cause I do think it's really good for your mental health. Cause they always talk about the benefits of like being in nature to improve your well-being. So I guess if you're at an allotment or if you're planting in your garden, the same thing.
And I think it's an activity that people can take up that's different from like things that are not harmful for you, but things that like going to the club or just going out drinking.
Yeah. I used to do that a lot as a child though.
In the garden?
Yeah, my mum used to go to B&Q and buy the little like, it was flowers though, not fruit. It was like, I mean like not fruit in bed, it was like flowers. And we'd have to like dig it up, so put it in, and then you'd wait till summer to see what it ends up being. Now looking back, I don't know why we were doing that, because nobody was fertilising that.
Nobody. I was going to say, did anything actually grow?
No, no, no. 1 year, something did grow.
Okay.
But only on one side of the garden. And our garden was like symmetrical with these plant potty things. So it just looked a bit imbalanced.
Well, I don't think I've ever like successfully grown anything. Anyway. So we've talked about the three things that we're grateful for. I feel like I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Bear with me. But Rashan always says that she does not make New Year's resolutions.
Oh, here we go.
But
not the peer pressure.
I'm going to suggest that we make one New Year's resolution, just one, about how we are going to celebrate Black Joy.
Oh, I like that.
With our friends, with our family, with our community. I've already decided on this. Barry doesn't know it, but I'm sure he can hear me while I'm recording. It's my 40th this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know you at the time. So I would like to have a onesie party, because I love onesies.
Oh, I've seen the pictures.
Yeah. So I did this one year in England, but I feel like it would be cool to do it here. I'm going to have a onesie and pajama party where we play like childlike and young adult games. Mm-hmm. So like Twister, Jenga, maybe some bear pong or paper pong, flip cup. Like what do you call it when you put yourself in the potato sack race, and you're jumping, an obstacle course, the whole works. I'm going to get like cake, water balloons, everything.
You say that's going to be in Jamaica?
Yes. So you're going to have to come back.
Coming back. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. I'll come back in April. We can replicate it in in England, except that when I did it last time, the Airbnb hostess definitely gave me a bad review because we left the house. Shout out to Airbnb.
Okay, so my thing that I'm going to do is when I get a win, even if it's small, doing something for myself to celebrate that. So even if it's like a solo day or it's ordering clothes, which is what I love doing at the moment, then that'll be my thing.
That's a good one. And I feel like we've talked about this before, like you definitely don't do it enough.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I, you know, in the comments, when we post this on social media, it'd be nice to see people commenting on how they're going to celebrate Black Joy. We'll definitely post a couple of books. So we'll post the book about intergenerational trauma, and we'll post a couple of other books about Black Joy and how to celebrate as a community in the caption. But yeah, I think this is a good way to start the new year. the idea of celebrating Black joy as our theme for 2024. I like it. So, Happy New Year, folks. See you on the flip side.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Woman CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Woman across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
Acast recommends.
Hello, I'm Jordan North.
And I'm William Hanson.
And together we host Help I Sexted My Boss, a podcast that combines William's world of etiquette tips
with Jordan's special northern charm.
We help navigate the everyday challenges of modern life.
Like how to tell someone that their breath smells like death.
And of course, what should you do if you've accidentally sexted your boss?
Just search for Help I Sexted My Boss on your chosen podcast platform and let us help you change your life for the better.
Or potentially maybe make things worse.
It could go either way.
Acast is a home of comedy podcasts, including Richard Herring, Chris and Rosie Ramsey,
and the one you're listening to right now.